Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
Today, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. We also hear a report from Pete Musto. And we close the show with An American Story, The Caliph, Cupid, and the Clock by O. Henry. But first, Ruhel Islam is walking among the ruins of his Gandhi Mahal restaurant in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The place was burned down during riots in the city following the death of George Floyd, a black man killed in May during an arrest by Minneapolis police. The arrest was captured on video, which spread quickly on the internet. The incident led to an international movement against abuse by police. Islam expressed his support for the movement even as his restaurant burned. His daughter quoted him in a now famous message she posted to Facebook, saying, "Let my building burn. Justice needs to be served. Put those officers in jail." Islam is a native of Bangladesh. He moved to the United States in 1996. In 2005, he opened Gandhi Mahal. The restaurant stood about 4 kilometers from the site of Floyd's arrest. "This is a very deep problem we need to solve. It's not their fault," he said of the protesters. "It's the system's fault. Our policymakers did not resolve the issues, and that's why this happened." He said his pain and loss was little in comparison to what Floyd's family had suffered. Islam added that the South Asian community needs to show it is united with African Americans because both groups are minorities and people of color. "It's very important to stand with them shoulder to shoulder and fight for what's right for everyone for a better world," he said. Islam is also working with several community organizations to recreate Gandhi Mahal as part of a multicultural community center. One of the groups is Pangaea World Theater. Its goal is to support human rights through artistic performance that deals with discrimination. Its founder, Deepankar Mukherjee, and Islam are close friends. Mukherjee said the Gandhi Mahal provided space for many of the theater's social and musical events. He misses the restaurant. "It's heartbreaking to even sit here," he said, while looking at the remains of the Gandhi Mahal. Mukherjee hopes that the new building will be big enough to hold Pangaea's theatrical shows, including more projects centered on Black lives. Mukherjee described Islam as a brother from back home who's committed to food justice, environmental justice. Islam has many big ideas for the new building. He pictures it as a place for peace, although the project is still being planned. He imagines it as a center where activists and community organizers can gather to discuss issues such as food security, climate change, and social justice. "I want to lead by example," Islam said. "I want to do something more. It's not about making money, but bringing people together." He aims to create an area in front of the restaurant that will include a Black Lives Matter memorial. He also dreams of an environmentally friendly space powered by the sun. Islam believes that rebuilding the restaurant as a community center will help renew the area, which many businesses have left because of the riots. We want to bring the energy back. We want to bring the businesses back, he said. Islam estimates the project will cost almost $10 million and take 3 to 5 years to complete. We'll be rising from the ashes, he said. I believe in the dream, and if you work hard toward your dream, you can get there.
Ceres is the largest object in the asteroid belt between the planets Mars and Jupiter. In a new study, scientists suggest this dwarf planet contains a large body of salty water under its cold surface. The researchers describe Ceres as an ocean world, a place that could have the right conditions to support living organisms. The study was released earlier this month in the publications Nature Astronomy, Nature Geoscience, and Nature Communications. The research is based on data gathered by NASA's Dawn spacecraft, which flew as close as 35 kilometers to the surface of Ceres in 2018. The study provides evidence that the dwarf planet remains geologically active with cryovolcanism, volcanoes that produce icy material. The scientists say their findings confirm the presence of a reservoir of salty water below the surface that has been slowly freezing. Planetary scientist and Dawn lead investigator Carol Raymond told the Reuters news agency, "It is this finding that makes Ceres an ocean world, even though liquid does not cover the whole dwarf planet. In the case of Ceres, we know the liquid reservoir is regional scale, but we cannot tell for sure that it is global. However, what matters most is that there is liquid on a large scale," Raymond said. Ceres is about 950 kilometers around. The scientists centered their work on a 92-kilometer-wide crater formed when a large object hit Ceres about 22 million years ago. The crater has two bright areas caused by salt collections from liquid that reached the surface. The scientists say the liquid started in a saltwater reservoir hundreds of kilometers wide, about 40 kilometers below the surface. When the large object crashed into Ceres, breaks in the dwarf planet's surface created openings for salty water to escape. There are several other solar system bodies beyond Earth where there at least appear to be oceans below the surface. These include Jupiter's moon Europa, Saturn's moon Enceladus, Neptune's moon Triton, and the dwarf planet Pluto. Water is considered a major necessity for life. Scientists want to study whether Ceres was ever home to microbial life. Planetary scientist Julie Castillo of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory said there is major interest at this point in examining the possibility of life in Ceres' reservoir. That is especially true considering it is cold and getting quite rich in salts, she added. I'm Pete Musto.
This week, we received a question from Thompson in China. The following words always make me very confused. Could you please tell me, what is the difference between novel coronavirus and new coronavirus? And which one should be official? Dear Thompson, thanks for your question. We suspect you are not alone in your confusion about what to call the virus that is causing so much pain and trouble around the world. When there is a new viral disease, three groups of experts work to describe it. The World Health Organization, or WHO, decides what to name the disease. Experts in the study of viruses decide what to name the virus. And the International Committee on Taxonomy of Viruses, or ICTV, studies the genetics of the virus to learn how it might be related to other viruses. COVID-19 is the cause of the current health crisis. CO stands for corona, VI stands for virus, and D stands for disease. The WHO added the -19 because 2019 was the year it appeared. The ICTV found that the virus was related to another virus that caused the SARS disease. That is why they called it SARS-CoV-2. In answer to your question, that is the official name for the virus. It was different enough from any other virus to be called novel. Scientists speak of a virus they have not seen before as novel. But novel and new before the word coronavirus mean the exact same thing. The words are interchangeable in this case. Novel and new are synonyms, different words that have the same or very similar meaning, in a single language. Both novel and new can mean something that is unique or original, or something not identified earlier. Novel is often used in connection with ideas, as in this Science News headline. Tackling the novel coronavirus calls for novel ideas. We often use novel to talk about a new way to solve a problem. Tammy won an award for her novel method of stopping crime. In both those examples, new could replace novel without a loss of meaning. But novel cannot always be used as a substitute for new. New is a more general term. Let's say, for example, a woman purchased a piece of art to give to her husband. She might say, "I bought a new painting for Fred." That means the painting is new to Fred. The painting itself might be old, maybe even made by an artist who died years earlier. Often new is used to mean latest. Novel would not work in those cases either. Here's an example. The singer has released a new album, but critics say it sounds like all his other recordings. Or, "I put new paper in the printer." The paper is not novel. Paper has been made in the same method and with the same materials for a long time. New is not a necessary word in this example. The speaker just means they refilled the printer with paper. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Jill Robbins.
The Caliph, Cupid, and the Clock. Prince Michael of Valleluna sat in the park on the seat he liked best. In the coolness of the night, he felt full of life. The other seats were not filled. Cool weather sends most people home. The moon was rising over the houses on the east side of the park. Children laughed and played. Music came softly from one of the nearer streets. Around the little park, cabs rolled by. The trains that traveled high above the street rushed past. These cabs and trains, with their wild noises, seemed like animals outside the park. But they could not enter. The park was safe and quiet. And above the trees was the great round shining face of a lighted clock in a tall old building. Prince Michael's shoes were old and broken. No shoemaker could ever make them like new again. His clothes were very torn. The hair of his face had been growing for 2 weeks. It was all colors, gray and brown and red and green-yellow. His hat was older and more torn than his shoes and his other clothes. Prince Michael sat on the seat he liked best, and he smiled. It was a happy thought to him that he had enough money to buy every house he could see near the park if he wished. He had as much gold as any rich man in this proud city of New York. He had as many jewels and houses and land. He could have sat at table with kings and queens. All the best things in the world could be his. Art, pleasure, beautiful women, honor. All the sweeter things in life were waiting for Prince Michael of Valleluna, whenever he might choose to take them. But instead, he was choosing to sit in torn clothes on a seat in a park. For he had tasted the fruit of the tree of life. He had not liked the taste. Here in this park, he felt near to the beating heart of the world. He hoped it would help him to forget that taste. These thoughts moved like a dream through the mind of Prince Michael. There was a smile across his face, with its many-colored hair. Sitting like this, in torn clothes, he loved to study other men. He loved to do good things for others. Giving was more pleasant to him than owning all his riches. It was his chief pleasure to help people who were in trouble. He liked to give to people who needed help. He liked to surprise them with princely gifts. But he always gave wisely, after careful thought. And now, as he looked at the shining face of the great clock, his smile changed. The prince always thought big thoughts. When he thought of time, he always felt a touch of sadness. Time controlled the world. People had to do what time commanded. Their comings and goings were always controlled by a clock. They were always in a hurry and always afraid because of time. It made him sad. After a little while, a young man in evening clothes came and sat upon a seat near the prince. For half an hour he sat there, nervously. Then he began to watch the face of the lighted clock above the trees. The prince could see that the young man had a trouble. He could also see that, somehow, the clock was part of the trouble. The prince rose and went to the young man's seat. "I am a stranger, and I shouldn't speak to you," he said. "But I can see that you are troubled. I am Prince Michael of Valjaluna. I do not want people to know who I am. That is why I wear these torn clothes. It is a small pleasure of mine to help those who need help. First, I must feel sure they are worth helping. I think you are. And perhaps your trouble may be ended if you and I together decide what to do about it." The young man looked up brightly at the prince, brightly, but he was still troubled. He laughed then, but still the look of trouble remained. But he accepted this chance to talk to someone. "I'm glad to meet you, prince," he said pleasantly. "Yes, I can see you don't want to be known. That's easy to see. Thanks for your offer to help, but I don't see what you can do. It's my own problem, but thanks." Prince Michael sat down at the young man's side. People often said no to him, but they always said it pleasantly. "Clocks," said the prince, "are tied to the feet of all men and women. I have seen you watching that clock. That face commands us to act, whether or not we wish to act. Let me tell you not to trust the numbers on that face. They will destroy you if they can. Stop looking at that clock. What does it know about living men and women?" "I usually don't look at that clock," said the young man. "I carry a watch, except when I wear evening clothes. I know men and women as I know the trees and the flowers," said the prince warmly and proudly. "I have studied many years, and I am very rich. There are few troubles that I cannot help. I have read what is in your face. I have found honor and goodness there, and trouble. Please accept my help. I can see that you are wise. Show how wise you are. Do not judge me by my torn clothes. I am sure I can help you." The young man looked at the clock again, and his face grew darker. Then he looked at a house beside the park. Lights could be seen in many rooms. 10 minutes before nine, said the young man. He raised his hands and then let them fall as if hope had gone. He stood up and took a quick step or two away. "Remain," commanded Prince Michael. His voice was so powerful that the young man turned quickly. He laughed a little. "I'll wait 10 minutes and then I'll go," he said in a low voice, as if only to himself. Then to the prince he said, "I'll join you. We'll destroy all the clocks, and women too." "Sit down," said the prince softly. "I do not accept that. I do not include women. Women are enemies of clocks. They are born that way. Therefore, they are friends of those who wish to destroy clocks. If you can trust me, tell me your story." The young man sat down again and laughed loudly. "Prince, I will," he said. He did not believe that Prince Michael was really a prince. His manner of speaking proved that. "You see that house, Prince? That house with lights and 3 windows on the 3rd floor? At 6 tonight, I was in that house with the young lady I'm going to... was going to marry. I'd been doing wrong, my dear Prince, and she heard about it. I was sorry. I wanted her to forget it. We're always asking women to forget things like that, aren't we, Prince? 'I want time to think,' she said. 'I will either forget it forever or never see your face again.' At 8:30, she said, 'Watch the middle window on the 3rd floor of this house. If I decide to forget, I will hang out a long white cloth. You will know then that everything is as it was before, and you may come to me. If you see nothing hanging from the window, you will know that everything between us is finished forever. That, said the young man, is why I've been watching that clock. The time was past 23 minutes ago. Do you see why I'm a little troubled, my torn prince? Let me tell you again, said Prince Michael in his soft voice, that women are the born enemies of clocks. Clocks are bad. Women are good. The white cloth may yet appear. Never, said the young man hopelessly. You don't know Marion. She is always on time to the minute. That was the first thing I liked about her. At 8:31, I should have known that everything was finished. I'm going to go west. I'll get on the train tonight. I'll find some way to forget her. Good night, Prince. Prince Michael smiled his gentle, understanding smile. He caught the other's arm. The bright light in the prince's eyes was softening. It was dreamlike, clouded. Wait, he said, till the clock tells the hour. I have riches and power, and I'm wiser than most men. But when I hear the clock tell the hour, I'm afraid. Stay with me till then. This woman shall be yours. You have the promise of the Prince of Valleluna. On the day you are married, I will give you $100,000 and a great house beside the Hudson River. But there must be no clocks in that house. Do you agree to that? Sure, said the young man. I don't like clocks. He looked again at the clock above the trees. It was 3 minutes before 9. I think, said Prince Michael, that I will sleep a little. It has been a long day. He lay down on the seat, as if he had often done it before. You'll find me on this park on any evening when the weather is good, said the prince. Come to me when you know the day you'll be married. I'll give you the money. Thanks, prince, said the young man. That day isn't going to come, but thanks. Prince Michael fell into a deep sleep. His hat rolled on the ground. The young man lifted it, placed it over the prince's face, and moved one of the prince's legs into an easier position. Poor fellow, he said. He pulled the torn coat together over the prince's body. It was 9. Loud and surprising came the voice of the clock, telling the hour. The young man took a deep breath and turned for one more look at the house. And he gave a shout of joy. From the middle window on the 3rd floor, a snow-white, wonderful cloth was hanging. Through the park, a man came, hurrying home. Will you tell me the time, please? Asked the young man. The other man took out his watch. 8:29, and then he looked up at the clock. But that clock is wrong, the man said. The first time in 10 years. My watch is always... But he was talking to no one. He turned and saw the young man running toward the house with 3 lighted windows on the 3rd floor. And in the morning, 2 cops walked through the park. There was only 1 person to be seen, a man asleep on a long park seat. They stopped to look at him. "'It's Michael, a dreamer,' said one. "'He's been sleeping like this in the park for 20 years. "'He won't live much longer, I guess.' "'The other cop looked at something in the sleeper's hand.
"'Look at this,' he said. $50. "'I wish I could have a dream like that.'
"'And then they gave Prince Michael of Valleluna a hard shake "'and brought him out of his dreams and into real life.'
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.